this afternoon.
I'd like to call meeting order, please. Mike, roll call.
Mayor Hiermath.
Here.
Vice Mayor Waters.
Here.
Councilmember Hornet.
Here.
Councilmember Pena.
Here.
Councilmember Rodman.
Here.
Councilmember Snyder.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
You know, I haven't done this in so long. Do you read the executive session?
Generally, no.
Okay. Perfect. I knew that. Motion a second to go into executive session?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Joining us in executive session will be the town manager, assistant town manager, legal services director, and the town clerk. Everyone is here.
Thank you, Mayor.
Introduce all the staff. Have a couple minutes about who they are.
I'd
like to call the meeting back to order, please. Council members' microphones are live. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Mayor Hiermath.
Here.
Vice Mayor Waters.
Here.
Councilmember Hornet.
Here.
Councilmember Pena.
Here.
Councilmember Rodman.
Here.
Councilmember Snyder.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here. Would everybody please rise for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and good evening, everyone. All right, upcoming meeting announcements. Mr. Standish.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Next Stormwater Utility Commission meeting is July 19th at 4 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the next Board of Adjustment meeting, July 24th, Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, August 7th, and Water Utility Commission meeting, August 13th, have all been canceled. And then after that, the next regular Stormwater Utility Commission meeting is August 16th at 4 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then we have the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board meeting August 21st at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers. And then the next Board of Adjustment meeting is scheduled for August 28th at 3 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The Historic Preservation Commission will be meeting September 4th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the Planning and Zoning Commission will be meeting September 4th at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers. And then the next regular town council session is September 5th at 6 p.m. right here in the council chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any council reports? All right, there being none, we'll move on to department reports. Ms. Jacobs?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to introduce the town clerk who will introduce our new artist for this month.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, members of council, tonight we are featuring new artwork on display in the council chambers and on the town's website by artist Miera. Born and raised in Arizona, Miera's interest in art started at a young age. Having experience in many mediums, watercolor ultimately won her heart due to the amazing colors and personality of the mineral watercolor paint. Currently, she focuses on teaching full-time in her private art studio located in the northwest desert of Tucson. And I believe she is here.
Right here? Oh,
nice. Yeah. Any other department reports? Nope. All right. Well, I've reviewed the order of business, and then we'll stand as posted. With that, call the audience. I do have two call the audience speakers. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to the audience. At the conclusion of call to the audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by the speakers. First speaker, Mike Zinkin.
This is all new, Mary. Which one do you use?
news.
Talking to the lamp. Yeah, I think it's that one.
I think my desk goes up.
This is the first time that we've used it, so.
All right, Mike Zinkin, resident Oral Valley. On May 16, 2018, I came to you regarding a rude communication between one of your councilmen and a resident of the community. I requested that you require said councilman to apologize. You failed to do so, sending a message to the citizens that you find this appalling behavior acceptable. Tonight, I come forward with an issue that's potentially illegal and certainly unethical. On his required financial statement, this councilman states that he and his wife control a business called Kanata Vistas LLC. On January 4th, this councilman communicated with the controlling HOA, Kanata Hills, informing them of the purchase of this property on the Kanata course, and his desire to meet with both the master HOA and sub HOAs to discuss design and approval requirements. On January 26, 2018, there was a communication confirming that this property was an escrow and also mentioned development possibilities. On June 29th, this individual replied to a question that he indeed still owned the property that was in the early stages of development. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Almost 2 weeks prior to June 29th, the communication I previously mentioned, at June 6th council meeting, during the fiscal 18-19 budget discussions, this councilman spoke of the benefits of a bond designated $3 million to go towards improvement on golf properties, the very same properties that this councilman has a financial interest. This councilman not only spoke in favor of the bond, he also voted in favor of the budget. This councilman could have very well recused himself from this discussion and the vote, and the budget still would have passed, but he didn't do that. This behavior may very well be in violation of Arizona Revised Statute chapter 38, verse 501 through 511, conflict of interest. This is because this councilman voted to use public monies to improve lands in which he has a financial interest. I've been notified it's a possibility you might have already, that somebody in the state has notified you regarding this behavior. I'll let the county attorney and the attorney general rule on the legal aspects of this behavior. However, regardless of their positions, the legality of this behavior demonstrates the highest form of unethical behavior. I'm asking you to censure this councilman for this behavior and even ask for his resignation. This type of unethical behavior should not be tolerated in government, certainly not in Oral Valley. I'll be sending you each an email of this communication, complete with the evidence that I've uncovered. It'll also be sent to the media. If you choose again to do nothing, you'll be sending yet another message to the voters that you condone the inappropriate and unethical behavior of Councilman Solomon. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a baseless allegation. So we'll move on to call to the audience. Speaker number two, Eric Gormley.
I'm here to discuss an issue that's of strong personal interest to me. I've been a resident in what is now Oral Valley since 1974, put a well in, 620 feet, 100 feet of water. Recently, my well is going dry. I attribute that to aquifer drainage, mostly due to Oral Valley water. So my choices are, I can put in another well, I can pay 30 grand, and give up my well right and go with Oral Valley water, or I can haul water. Those are my three choices. Now, in fairness, I think there should be a provision of reduced hookup fees for long-term well residents whose wells have gone dry. I don't know, but less than the 30 grand, certainly. And that could be looked at as compensation for giving up one's well right. So I'm asking the council and mayor to consider that possibility.
Sir, would you state your name into the microphone? I did not hear it.
My name is Eric Gormley.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been in Oral Valley since what is now Oral Valley since 74.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. Councilor Song?
I'd like to respond to the first call to the audience. Unfortunately, what was as common with Mr. Zinkin's accusations, you will find that they are completely baseless and incorrect. And this is coming from an individual who has a long record of difficulties with complaints against himself as far as ethical behavior. But I just wanted to assure everyone that there was absolutely nothing that occurred that was unethical. I do not own property on the golf course. And once again, he has the facts incorrect, and he can send all the letters and emails and investigations he'd like. Thank you.
Thank you. with Councilman Robin.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, can we ask, you know, Mary or Peter or whoever the right people are to maybe get together with this gentleman?
Please.
Thank you.
Customer Sullivan.
Yeah, I'd actually, since the question was raised, says, is there credence to his comment that Oro Valley drained his well?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, that's probably incorrect. I don't know. I'm going to get with the resident and find out where the property is located, as well as I'm not familiar with the requirement where if a resident hooks up to municipal water that they have to give up their well right. So there's some information there that may have been miscommunicated in the past, but I'll get with the resident and get some more information.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing it to our attention.
Next is presentations. Mike, proclamation number one.
Proclamation, Drowning Impact Awareness Month.
Office of the Mayor, Oro Valley, Arizona Proclamation, Drowning Impact Awareness Month, August 2018. Whereas drowning is a top cause of injury and death for children and teens in Arizona, affecting not only the victims, but also families, emergency personnel, and our society as a whole. And whereas child drownings are nearly 100% preventable, including drownings which are classified as maltreatment and make up an average of 1 in 4 cases in Arizona. And whereas research-proven strategies can save lives, including constant and capable supervision, restricting access to water, use of life jackets, swimming lessons for adults and children at the appropriate age, rapid emergency response, including CPR, and safe, stable, and nurturing relationships and communities to break the cycle of maltreatment. And whereas during the month of August, the Drowning Prevention Coalition of Arizona, in collaboration with state and local governments, community organizations, and private citizens, will be engaging communities throughout Arizona in a coordinated and comprehensive response. Now, therefore, I, Dr. Satish I. Hiremath, Mayor of Oro Valley, do hereby proclaim August 2018 as Drowning Impact Awareness Month and urge all communities and citizens of Arizona to participate in efforts to reduce drowning risk, strengthen families, and protect children and teens, dated this 18th day of July, 2018. And with us today, I do believe we have, I don't know if Chief Carr is here, but Community Relations Manager Anne Marie Braswell, who's going to come up and accept the proclamation. Anne Marie.
Thank you so much, Mayor Hiremath and Council. We really appreciate your acknowledgement of Drowning Impact Awareness Month. Ironically, the mayor just asked me, hey, are you going to have those purple bands? So every year you remember that we will give you a ribbon, or in past years I've given you a bracelet. And really, that's just a simple way that you can wear it and hopefully engage the public in a conversation about why purple, why you're wearing that purple ribbon in August. And it's something that started, Drowning Impact Awareness Month started in 2004 with the help of Phoenix Children's Hospital, and people will frequently ask, why August? There isn't a good answer to that, but we can assume that the reason that they took on this cause and that the rest of the public safety partners have followed suit is because, unfortunately, there's frequently a spike in pediatric drowning incidents in August. So important for us to have an increased awareness of how important it is for us to really take a community-wide approach to drowning prevention. The one thing that we really impress on people is that the only sure-proof way to make sure that our kids are safer on the water is adult supervision. Complete attention to children in the water, not on a mobile device, not eating, not talking, which would be my hazard since I like to talk. So we appreciate your attention to it. This is something that's a passion for firefighters in particular, because it's their worst call, is responding to a pediatric drowning. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for what you do. Thank you. Mike, presentation number two.
Presentation from the Oro Valley Optimist Club regarding veterinarian care funding for Oro Valley police canines after retirement.
So this one is a really, really important presentation for we on council. You know, part of the impetus for us developing Nirvana Parkside was to make sure that we had ample space for large and small dogs. And so if you remember, part of the plan for the initial development of Nirvana Parkside that sat idle at that time, I think for about 18, 19 years, was to not only put the infrastructure and a couple of multi-purpose fields for our kids, but there was a very strong push by this council to make sure that individuals who are pet owners, and I happen to own three dogs and two cats, that they had a place to take their animals and developed a small and large dog park. Flash forward to probably about a year ago when the Southern Arizona First Responders Group came in, and they were talking about putting in a memorial for first responders and veterans over at the Nirvana Park site, of which the town dedicated the land. We as a council got together with their board and talked about the possibility of adding a canine unit. And the canine unit was received very, very well. And with that, a fundraising effort started. And then Councilmember Pena approached me with an idea really about how to further the benefits of the canine units that are not retired, or actually being retired, and still providing care for them because they serve an integral part of being a first responder team to residents of the town of Oro Valley. So with that, I actually tasked Councilmember Pena to kind of charge forward and do some due diligence, and I'm very happy to report we are here today because of her efforts. And Councilmember Pena, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mayor Hiremath. So I had the great opportunity of going to watch a training one night with our officers and the canines, and I will tell you it was absolutely eye-opening for me. And as a council member, sometimes we don't know how we can help in certain ways, and so when you ask questions, that's all I did when I was there to find out what we can do to help. And they basically said nothing. We're good to go. So one of the things that did come out was that the canines, while their medical care is taken care of while they're on the force, when they retire, they go with their handlers. And the reason most of the time they do go with the handlers is because they're specially trained. And so unlike dogs that maybe you and I adopt, these canines don't have, they have to stay with their trainers basically. So the handlers end up having to pay for the medical care. And having been there that night, I got to see for myself just exactly how much physical testing these canines go through. And so it's very possible that when they go into retirement, they could have chronic medical issues. And so as I get to thinking about it, and because, as Mayor Hiremath said, our town is really pet-loving, pet-friendly, and so this would be a great way not only to help our canines in their retirement to have the best medical care available to them, but also to help our handlers, because as we all know, we would spend a tremendous amount of money on our pets, so we know what that looks like. So fast forward, it's been, I think, about a year in working on this, trying to find a home to be able to have an organization, a 501c3, that can house and administer the funds. And so what we did through a lot of work between council and our staff was great with trying to help figure out how to do this. We ended up being able to work with our Optimist Club of Oro Valley. And so through that organization, we now have a fund that we can set up and that we can have, if people are interested in donating, they can donate to this retirement fund for our canines. And I will tell you that the service that they provide is so worth being able to help them with their medical care. And so tonight, while thanking the council for their support, I'd like to thank the staff. And then we have our handlers here, and if they could come up to the front. And then I'd also like to thank our police staff from Chief Sharp on down, Commander LeSure, he's been instrumental. And so And then we also have Don Cox and John Klipstein from the Oral Valley Optimist. Would you come up, please? And then we've got Emerson, who is our dog that we'll be talking about. And then Lisa Bayless, who is an Oral Valley resident and also a business person here in Oral Valley, is going to provide the seed funding for this with a $1,000 presentation. So wow. Thank you.
Good evening, Council, and those members of the audience.
Wait, the dog needs to state his name and address.
Go ahead, Steve. Put your hand up there.
You tell the dog.
We have plenty of meat in the back if you need it.
My name is Don Cox, and I am a proud resident of Oro Valley. I'm also the president of the Oro Valley Optimist Club again. John Klipstein is our immediate past president. This opportunity came to us kind of out of the blue. To give you some background about the Optimist Club, we are a club that supports primarily children's activities, helping our kids become great adults. Part two of our overall umbrella of responsibilities is to work very closely with local police departments. We were very instrumental in bringing the Disposamed program to Oral Valley, which I'm so proud of. This has kept so many opioids off the streets. I could give you a number, but it would just amaze people. There's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pounds of opioids that we have collected through the Oral Valley Police Department. Not we, the Police Department did. Our Drug Awareness Day, which is in late April or early May of every year, which there's a canine demonstration. We work very closely and fund that. We fund Project Graduation, which protects our youth on graduation night. So when this came before us, we jumped at the opportunity to help. These wonderful animals, if you've ever been to Drug Awareness Day, there's a demonstration by the canines of what they do. And when you stand and watch and see them demonstrate their skills, it's got to lead to bad things in the future for their health. The policemen who are the handlers of these dogs have to bear that cost once the dog retires. And we just don't feel that that's an appropriate thing to do. So we volunteered to use our 501c3 status to accept contributions to help for the medical care of the canines once they've retired. When we get such a request, it'll be reviewed by an individual who is very involved in what should and should be paid. And if, in fact, the determination has been made that the medical bill is service-related, we will take money from those people who have donated. And we're so happy that we have one of our great donors here this evening. So I ask all of you, those in front of me, those behind me, to think about this program and make a contribution, however large or small you wish, to take care of these fine animals, because they are, again, one of the frontline people who protect our community. And we do have, just I want to give them a plug, we do have one of the safest cities in the state of Arizona, and it's because of people like you and you and you. And we sincerely thank you. Have a great evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you like to share a little bit of information about Emerson and his surgery and him coming back?
Yeah, first thing I want to say is that we're, as a unit, I'm extremely grateful and thankful to everybody involved. A couple things I just want to say. These dogs are high-octane athletes. They do everything, especially the Malinois, does everything at 100%. They don't know anything less, and they're not the smartest, so sometimes they might, instead of going around things, they might try to go through things. So injuries sometimes happen, and in fact, Emerson, it's a common injury, basically had some compressed disc in his back, and in April, he wants to talk.
That dog talks, we're going.
I can, but it won't be friendly. he had a I believe it's called a lappendectomy. I'm not a vet, but basically what they did is...
Oh,
I love to get a picture of that. Huh?
Thank you.
Did you get that, Misty, here. I hope?
Go. I'm paying attention. Oh, Misty.
Essentially, they had decompressed some discs because he had a pretty severely pinched nerve. Did you get it that
time?
You
got that one.
So that, you know, was obviously a relatively substantial surgery, and they just continue to occur the older they get. So, but really, if you guys have any questions, I'm probably better at answering that than explaining anything. Emerson's 8 and a half. Every day he gets closer to retirement, but really, Roger and I are extremely thankful for the generous people that we have involved in the community.
Councilmember Snyder?
Yeah, thank you. Officer Pierce. How long is the term generally of one of our service dogs, and how many do we have on the force?
So currently we have three. We have two dual purpose, which is what Emerson and Bruno are, which means they're patrol narcotics, and then we have one, his name's Justin. He's a single purpose explosive dog. They work as long as they physically can, and Emerson came on board at 14 months, which is young, mm-hmm. and he's one of the longest, if not the longest by now, tenure dogs that we've ever had, a dual purpose at least, which was over 7 years now. Mm-hmm. So 8 and a half, he's 8 and a half, and he's been with us over 7 years.
Don, how would we donate it? Who would we send the donations to? How do you do that?
You can send them to me. Check made out to the Oro Valley Optimist Club Youth Fund. And they can be sent to 1065 West Squawbush Court, Oro Valley, Arizona.
Just note on the check that it's...
Oro Valley Optimist Club Youth Fund, Retirement Police K-9.
Okay.
That way we can keep the funds very separate from... And that's one of the things we do. We keep this fund separate from all the other funds, et cetera.
You want to finish your zip code? You left it off.
85737, proudly.
And then I just want to say thank you for spearheading the Optimist Club and all the great things that you do. And John and his beautiful wife, Kim, for really stepping up and actually taking the time to lead the community. And Lisa, thank you so much. You know, this is a very important program to us, and it's just it's very gratifying to know that there's residents out there like you that truly take an investment in your community and take the time and the effort to make a difference. And just want to say thank you again publicly. So
thank you. As part of the town, it's in our nature.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, with that, no more presentations. We'll move on to consent. Council's pleasure.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to pull letter B.
B is pulled. All right, if nothing else, I'll entertain a motion for A and C.
So moved.
Second.
Motion is second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Mike, letter B.
Fiscal year 2017-18 financial update through May 2018.
Councilmember Robner.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I'd like Stacy to kind of go through this report orally as well to just understand where the surpluses have come, what the projections look like in all of the funds. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Just again, reviewing all of your attachments, overlooking the financials through the month of May, we are in excellent, strong financial position, continue to be as we approach the year end. On attachment A, the general fund, you can see that at about 92% of the way through the year in May, all the revenues are almost at 95% of the budget. And so you can just see as a highlight there, we've gotten in a lot of those categories, we've already received the budgeted amount through May, primarily due to the construction activity that's happening in the town. So construction sales taxes is driving a lot of our sales tax collections to exceed budget, as well as our license and permit revenues. So we're seeing those exceed budget by quite a large margin. Utility taxes are also coming in over budget as well. Another factor that's contributing to our cash and our revenues in that fund is, as you recall, when we adopted the budget for 18-19, we consolidated the bed tax fund into the general fund. And so our year-end estimates in the general fund assume the cash savings, basically the savings that we've accumulated in the bed tax fund, rolling into the general fund. So that's captured as well in the year-end estimates. And that's about $600,000. So you can see that. And as well on the expenditure side, almost all of our departments they're all trending under budget. And so our at 92% of the way through the year, we're at about 83% of the budgets being spent. So through year end, we are expecting at this point about a $2.6 million surplus in the general fund. And again, probably about $600,000 of that is this cash reserves transferred into the bed or from the bed tax into the general fund. The highway fund similarly is in excellent financial condition. We are looking at planned use of reserves, planned use of our savings in that fund of about $441,000 in that fund this year, which is much less than the $1.1 million planned use of reserves that we thought we would have in that fund. And that's primarily due to the 25-cent property tax revenues that we're receiving to help supplement our pavement preservation program this fiscal year. The bed tax fund, we've seen strong revenue growth in that fund. That fund is doing very well, again, due primarily to the renovations that happened at the Hilton this fiscal year, and those revenues exceeding budget by a wide margin as well. Finally, the community center fund, we are seeing, again, continue to see strong improvements in that fund. We expect that those operations to trend right on budget, actually, for the total fiscal year. The contracted revenues from Troon, we're expecting to exceed budget slightly at the end of the year, primarily due to outside golf revenues, outside golf play, and some food and beverage revenues that are exceeding expectations, and tennis revenues. Really, all of the categories of the operations over there that are Troon managed are exceeding budget. The expenditures trending a little bit over budget on the Troon managed side, however, primarily due to water usage with the hot, dry months that we're seeing over the last fiscal year. So. Revenues from the sales tax collections are expected to end on budget for the fiscal year in that fund. The town-operated fitness activities and operations that the town operates over there, the revenues are expected to exceed the budget by over $200,000. Very strong growth in membership revenues and classes and the registrations that we're seeing over there for that. Slightly over on the expenditure side as well, but that's really due to the need to meet the demand over there, programming, staffing for the camps and the programs over there. Overall, bottom line, in the community center fund, we expect to end the year with a slight surplus with current year operations of about $30,000 to $31,000. However, as you recall, we started the year with a negative fund balance in that fund. And so netting those two with the current year surplus, with the beginning of the year negative, we still estimate that the fund to end the year is a negative, which we've projected all the way through this fiscal year. However, it's improved. The beginning first quarter of the fiscal year, we thought we would have closer to a $94,000-$95,000 deficit in that fund. Now it's about $66,000. Another important point to point out in the community center fund, just to clarify for the public, we planned a $120,000 payback from the community center fund to the general fund to pay back loaned funds at the beginning of fiscal year 15-16. And we do plan on paying that $120,000 back to the general fund this year. It's incorporated into the year-end estimates in this fund. So we will be making that transfer in this month.
Stacy, is that in the transfer out thing?
That is correct, yes.
So $120,000 of that we're paying ourselves back for the loan?
Correct.
And so if we really looked at this, we really could say we're $120,000 ahead, I guess, a different way.
Right. We're just moving that from one bucket to the other.
Yeah,
correct.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilman Robin, then Councilman Solomon.
Yeah, just a couple of questions. What's the amount of the bed tax that we're projecting for this last fiscal year?
Total bed tax collections for this fiscal year, we're looking at about $1.3 million.
So the majority of that comes out of the Hilton, I assume. There are others, but...
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So that's money that comes back into the community from that. Okay, thank you. Let me just ask another question, because we've gone through this sometimes. The debt ratio in the town, you know, we've got borrowed money, mostly through bonds. Somehow I remember an 8-to-1 ratio of some kind, asset to debt. Is that right, or help me out?
So we're closer to about a 10 times coverage, 10-to-1 ratio with our sales taxes and our excise tax-backed bonds. We have a very, very low amount of excise tax-backed bonds outstanding, and that compared to the revenues that we get that we would pledge to pay those back. It is about a 10-to-1 coverage.
So it's
on the
like borrowing
side.
$10,000 against your $100,000 house.
Right.
Okay.
One more question there, Stacey. I know.
Let me go, Councilman Solomon.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
I was just a question of our total bond debt and who owes it.
We have outstanding. We have about $53 million in outstanding bonds. The majority of those bonds outstanding are to serve the water utility, and the water utility fund pays those back through their rate structure. And that's common for jurisdictions when they have utilities. So,
that's nothing against Peter personally, right?
Hey, you feeling the heat yet, Peter?
Thank you.
So those payments are to the water utility is not coming out of the sales tax.
That is correct. They're coming out of the water rates,
including the new ones that we're proposing. Perhaps will again be funded through the user fees, basically.
That is correct.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you,
Councilman Solomon.
Just a few clarifications. So, my understanding is what you said on the community center fund is the fund started off this year with a negative balance, but even taking that into account, well, if we remove that, basically this year through May, the community center fund is not running a negative of millions of dollars. It's actually a little bit ahead. We've collected in revenue from our different revenue sources more than the expense of running the community center, and I'm assuming that's also the golf.
That is correct. And so if you look at your May financials, we are actually running a surplus in that fund right now of about $327,000 year to date with those operations.
So why do I hear people in the community saying we're losing a fortune on the community center and golf? Is that just misinformation? You're our financial person. I mean, are we losing money on that, or are we actually running a surplus with revenue versus expenses?
As I understand it, the way it's been characterized is the losses that are being discussed relate only to the operating losses experienced by the Troon managed operations, and they don't take into account the dedicated half-cent sales tax income that has been approved to fund the operations. So it's a one-sided story, as I understand it, from what's being characterized.
But when you even use the term loss, is that the proper way to describe it? Doesn't a town provide services that have expenses associated with it? Isn't that the town's
Absolutely.
Job?
Absolutely. It's the sales tax is subsidizing the services that we are providing to the public.
That cute attack dog that'll rip your throat out if you're on the wrong side of the law, is that dog a loss, or are we funding that dog?
That dog is funded, yes, with our revenues.
Okay. On the street maintenance, you had made a comment about it was low, but it was low because we're getting money from Pima County, so we don't have to spend our own money. So it's not like we're spending more on street maintenance than we should be. It's down because people are basically giving us money, so we don't have to use our taxpayer money for the street maintenance. Is that correct?
Correct. The Pima County, they are providing those road maintenance and improvement services to the town. They are paying for it on basically through their own funds, through the dedicated property tax funds. But that work is happening within the town boundaries, so we're benefiting from that. They aren't giving us money. They're just paying for the work that's being done in the town boundaries.
Okay. Then you had mentioned the general fund was up by $2.6 million, and I think you said $600,000 of that was a transfer. So even neglecting that, you're telling us that our main fund, pretty much at the end of the year, we have a surplus of over $2 million.
2.2?
That is correct. That's what we're projecting for year end.
As an accountant, would you say that's pretty good fiscal responsibility on a part of the town?
This does not call for an opinion.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. Next and final question. You mentioned construction sales tax and how that's gone up and contributed. What would happen if we lost our construction sales tax? What type of financial impact would that have on the town? And where would we get the sources, the revenue to replace those?
Losing our construction sales tax revenues would have a significant impact on our capital program primarily. We collect over $5 million in construction sales tax and have for about the last few years. And those revenues have gone a long way to help build Naranja Park, to help build out a lot of the capital projects that we have put into place throughout our community. You know, those are one-time dollars that we dedicate to one-time capital needs. And so if those were reduced or went away, which we saw during the recession, we would either have to just stop our capital program and not build new facilities, or we would have to supplement and find other sources from the general fund and pull from our existing recurring revenue sources to help pay for capital programs.
Or cut services, correct?
Or absolutely cut services. Definitely cut services or just cut out capital improvements altogether.
All right. Actually, let me go Councilmember Snyder, then Councilmember Robin.
Thank you. I just want to return to the year-end conversation about the Community Center Fund, not to belabor it, but I want to make sure I am understanding this. We started the year with approximately $90,000 deficit, right?
That's correct.
Right. And so you're saying that even with the gains of a little over 30,000, we're still going to have a minus of about 60,000. If we did not make that $120,000 pay, move that from one fund to another, it's our money, it's still in town, we would actually be to the good $60,000. Am I right?
Right.
So anyway, one other question. We're talking about bed tax, the money that we get when guests stay in our hotels, et cetera, and that is subject to the 2.5% sales tax. Do you allocate any of the half-cent sales tax out of the bed tax to the Community Center Fund?
The half-cent sales tax is a retail portion of the bed tax fund, and so, yes, that half-cent does go into the Community Center Fund, yes.
Councilmember Rodman and Vice Mayor Waters.
Yeah, just a question because I don't know the answer. The construction sales tax being used for one-time expenses is a decision the council has made at some point, correct? It's not a law. It's just that's the fiscal responsibility that the council has put on itself. Is that correct?
Correct. It's a philosophy. Again, we don't want to dedicate those one-time taxes to increasing our recurring costs, just knowing how volatile they are. Right. So that's been an overall policy that the town has followed for many years.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor Waters?
Stacy, bed tax, back to that if you would, over $255,000 over budget. It seems like a significant increase in bed tax. To what is that attributed?
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Vice Mayor, it is. We were actually fairly conservative with our budget this year because we weren't sure really the impact, the true impact of the renovations being done at the Hilton, what that would have on our revenues. And so we didn't want to over budget for those, but have found that just with overall tourism up at all of our hotels, that this has been, you know, the case. But primarily the success of the Hilton renovations is driving this.
The renovations didn't.
Correct. Correct. That is correct.
Does that change the equation with Visit Tucson and what the town invests in promoting this economic development?
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Vice Mayor, we increased the contract with Visit Tucson this year in reflection to reflect some of these additional revenues we're seeing. We are not on a percentage basis, but we are on a service basis of a cost per, and so that's the. But it is a reflection of the conversations that we have when we look to renew the agreement with them as our designated tourism entity.
Are we capped out with them now, or is there room for more negotiation?
There's no cap out. It will be a conversation that I'll have with the executive director every year.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion for letter B.
Mr. Mayor, I move to approve letter B, fiscal year 2017-18 financial.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Good motion, news, Stacy.
Motion carries 7-0. So as we move to the regular agenda, item number one, for those of you who are first-timers here, you're more than welcome to leave anytime you like.
We still have a forum?
Well, no, not council.
All
right, regular agenda item number one, Mike.
Discussion and possible action regarding the conceptual site plan, landscape plan, and phase one architecture for two office buildings located on the west side of Oracle Road, just north of Greenock Drive.
Melanie.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Melanie Sims, and I'm a senior planner with the town of Oro Valley. Our purpose tonight is to present conceptual designs for two new office buildings located on a commercially zoned property. Office use is an allowed use within the existing zoning district, so the focus of review tonight is site layout and design. These items were considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission on July 10th, in which they recommended approval subject to the conditions in Attachment 1. First, to orient ourselves, the subject property is located on the west side of Oracle Road, just north of Greenock Drive. It is located between a roughly 85-foot drainage way and surrounded by single-family residential homes to the west, apartments and office uses to the north, offices to the south, and vacant land to the east, which is proposed for future residential. The proposed conceptual site plan features two office buildings that will be built in phases. The first phase is for a dermatologist office, which is highlighted in yellow. It will also include all the parking, refuse, loading, and landscaping for the entire project. The second phase is for the rare building, which is shown in blue. It will also be a similar commercial office use that is allowed within the existing zoning district, but a tenant has not yet been determined. Both buildings are single story or 18 feet tall and will be accessed by a shared drive from Oracle Road. The proposed development also features densely planted trees along the entire perimeter, acting as a natural screening from adjacent properties. The other item being considered tonight is the conceptual architecture for the dermatologist office. Architecture for the rear building will be considered by town council at a future date, but must be compatible to the design being presented this evening. Some key elements of the architectural design is a varying roofline and use of different colors and materials to break up the wall plane and building mass. Several key elements of the design are also found in buildings that surround the site. These include utilizing similar colors, such as natural hues, and materials, such as a metal seam roof and stone accents. There was one neighborhood meeting held for this project. The concerns raised regarded increased traffic, impacts the development may have on stormwater flows, the use of the second building, and impacts on views from surrounding residences. Measures to mitigate these concerns include providing only one access point from Oracle Road, and in regards to drainage, per code requirements, post-development stormwater flows cannot increase the existing flows. And when considering impacts to views, it is important to mention the proposed property is at a much lower elevation than Oracle Road and is separated from adjacent residences by the 85-foot drainage way. Additionally, the nearest home is over 150 feet away. The applicant is also, again, proposing a single-story building height and using densely planted trees along the entire perimeter to screen the development from adjacent properties. The project was considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission on July 10th, during which, and as permitted by code, the commission approved an increase in parking for the front building and removal of unhealthy trees on the property and along Oracle Road. The process for assuring drainage will be addressed was also discussed. Drainage reports are required during the final design review process. However, the applicant has already submitted their drainage report for this project. In summary, the request meets the design principles and standards of the zoning code. As such, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval subject to the conditions in Attachment 1. This includes a condition for the applicant to address minor formatting comments during final design review, which are detailed in the accompanying exhibit. This concludes my presentation, and the applicant is also here to answer any questions.
Sure, just one question. I got me, Vice Mayor Waters, and then Councilmember Hornet. Melanie, the traffic increase impact, the way I'm looking at this now, there's only one ingress egress off of Oracle. There's zero connectivity to Greenock, zero connectivity to Push Ridge. What help me understand what the traffic impact, it seems like it's an island all onto itself.
It is an island.
Yeah. Am I reading it wrong, or?
Mayor Hiermath, that is correct. The proposed development will only be accessed off Oracle Road. Okay. And the concerns were that it increased traffic.
And there's no plans for future connectivity at any point in time to go into Greenock Road?
Correct.
Okay. Vice Mayor Waters?
Okay, that was one thing. I have a couple things. On these one-dimensional drawings, it's always bothered me that I can't see textures. I can't see any kind of architectural thought behind these elevations. That's one thing. Did I understand you to say there'll be stone elements like these, and you showed some other buildings? That's what bothers me. There will be texture on these buildings?
Mayor Hiermath, Vice Mayor Waters, that is correct. So the tan area will be stucco material. The roof is a metal seam roof, and the stone veneer is actually the wainscoting along the front, as well as entire wall planes that you can see along the sides.
Is it brown stone? I don't see much in these architectural sketches. Never have. Maybe we could work on that. That's one of my things. The other was about neighborhood meeting. Wasn't there some talk about drainage concerns? And there might possibly be a future meeting because of drainage concerns. How does that work?
Mayor Hiermath, Vice Mayor Waters, that is correct. Drainage was brought up during the meeting. However, the concerns were not as associated with this project. And maybe to provide more information, I'll have Mr. Paul Kiesler, our town engineer, discuss.
So Mayor Hiermath, Vice Mayor Waters, for this particular project, it doesn't produce much drainage. It produces cumulatively 9 cubic feet per second in a 100-year storm. And if we could put up the site plan, because of its proximity to those two major washes, whatever drainage falls on that is gone long before any drainage ever comes down through that corridor.
I was just curious about the mention of future meeting. Something might change in this regard? Do we require a future meeting?
There's Mayor. No future meeting that I see necessary for this.
And if I may, Mayor Hammett, Vice Mayor Waters, so during the first neighborhood meeting, yes, there was a discussion that a future formal neighborhood meeting was not necessary, but those interested about drainage were welcome to contact staff to set up meetings and talk individually.
So this is an administrative issue. Okay, thank you.
Councilman Hornet?
The parking, the 55 spaces, that's for the entire both buildings?
Mayor Hiremath, Councilmember Hornet, no, the 55 spaces are actually for the front building. There are additional 36 spaces for the rear building.
I misunderstood. I thought it was for the whole thing. So there's 55 plus 38, but in the initial, they only have to build the 55. Is that correct?
No, the first phase of development will be the entire site. Everything will be built as shown here except for that rear building.
So
all spaces will be completed.
So they'll have 55 plus 38.
Correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Any other customers, Snyder?
Malini, is that because they are bringing, how many employees are going to be there? Have they talked about that? I understand they're going to move their operations up into that building, and that's going to be more than just patient traffic. Is that correct?
That is correct. The number is based on the amount of employees as well as the amount of customers they currently experience.
Bless you. Customer opinion?
So, Malini, as far as you're concerned, staff is concerned, all the project is met, all of the town's policies, procedures, it's in compliance?
Correct.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd like to move to approve. So I move to approve the conceptual site plan, landscape plan, and phase one architecture subject to the conditions in attachment one, finding they are in conformance with the design principles and applicable design standards of the zoning code.
Second. I'll second. Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Mike, regular agenda item number 2.
Discussion and possible action regarding a conceptual site plan and landscape plan for Victory Worship Center and Springboard Youth Crisis Center, located on the northwest corner of Tangerine Road and Como Drive.
Malini.
Is the applicant disappointed they didn't get to present? Or?
All right. So our purpose tonight is to present a revised conceptual site and landscape plan for Victory Worship Center. The applicant's request includes a parking lot expansion on the east side of the property and gaining access to Como Drive. There was a development plan for this project previously approved by Pima County. The parking lot expansion was shown on it. However, it also included a restriction for accessing Como Drive. As such, the main focus of the review is the access to Como Drive this evening. The applicant's request was considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission on July 10th, in which they recommended approval subject to the conditions in Attachment 1. So first, Victory Worship Center is located on the northwest corner of Tangerine Road and Como Drive. To the south of the property is also the Springboard Youth Crisis Center. And both developments are surrounded by larger lot homes to the north, west, and south, and the Episcopal Church of the Apostles to the east. There is also a pending rezoning for residential development on the property to the east surrounding the Episcopal Church. The applicant's request features an additional 98 parking spaces screened by earthen berms and trees. Again, the parking expansion was shown on the previously approved development plan, so the main focus of review is accessing Como Drive. Currently, Como Drive is an unpaved road, and as such, the applicant's request includes improving Como Drive by paving it from Tangerine Road just north of their proposed access point, which is shown with the orange line. It also features a raised median to prevent traffic from exiting the church and heading further north along Como Drive. This design is a result of neighbor concerns regarding increased traffic and dust along unimproved parts of Como. As such, a condition of approval is included to allow the town engineer to permit full access onto Como should it be fully improved. There were two neighborhood meetings for the proposed project, the main item of concern being increased dust and traffic along Como Drive. Measures to mitigate these concerns include the raised median preventing traffic from exiting the church and going further north along Como Drive. The proposed project was considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission on July 10th, in which traffic traveling south along Como Drive to access the church, so from Limewood, north from Limewood down, drainage improvements, and the town's dust control measures were discussed. In summary, the revised conceptual site plan and landscape plan meet the design principles and standards of the zoning code. As such, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval subject to the conditions in Attachment 1. This includes a condition for the applicant to address minor formatting changes during final design review, which is detailed in the provided exhibit. This concludes my presentation, and the applicant is also here this evening. Thank you.
Council, have any questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I move to approve the conceptual site and landscape plan for Victory Worship Center, subject to the conditions in Attachment 1, based on the finding is in conformance with the design principles and applicable design standards of the zoning code.
Second.
Motion is second. Any further discussion?
One thing.
Councilmember Steiner.
I'd just like to thank the town engineer for coming up with that solution. These are kids coming out of a parking lot, and they need to access onto Como, so they're not trying to jump into traffic right on Tangerine. Not the most experienced drivers, but I think that was a good solution, keeping the traffic from going north. So I just want to say thank you.
All right, if no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Mike, item number 3.
3A, resolution number R18-29, declaring the proposed zoning code amendment to Chapter 25 regarding standards for communication facilities, provided in Exhibit A with an Attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
So this is AB, so I'll entertain a motion for 3A.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Mike, 3B.
Public hearing, ordinance number O18-11, amending Chapter 25 of the Oro Valley Zoning Code regarding communication facilities.
Malini.
Do you
want a chair?
To sit down?
So our purpose tonight is to present a zoning code text amendment to revise requirements for communication facilities. These revisions include updating the setback requirements and conformance to federal law regarding co-locations and modifications, as well as gaps in services. This amendment was recognized in the Planning Division's work plan and considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission on July 10th, in which they recommended approval. The first part of the code amendment is to update setback requirements for all new ground-mounted facilities. The current code requires all new facilities be set back 2 feet for every 1 foot in height from all buildings, including those on site, property lines, and overhead wires. The purpose for this code requirement was for safety should the tower fall. However, with new designs and more durable materials, this concern is no longer necessary. As such, staff researched surrounding jurisdictions' requirements and found most require new facilities to utilize the zoning district's building setbacks and be set back from residential areas. Therefore, the proposed amendment does require both. The second part of the proposed code amendment is for conformance to federal law. Specifically, there are two elements that are being affected. One is co-locations and modifications, and the other is gaps in services. So although the current code encourages co-locations, it does not explicitly state that they must be approved when they do not substantially change the physical dimensions of an existing structure, which is now a requirement by federal law. The proposed code amendment stipulates these co-locations and modifications cannot be denied by the Planning and Zoning Administrator and further define what a substantial change is by utilizing the guidelines published by the FCC. Additionally, federal law indicates flexibility in applying code requirements may be warranted when there are gaps in services. As such, the proposed code amendment allows the Planning and Zoning Administrator to waive requirements should a denial of the cell facility be in conflict with federal law. The proposed code amendment was reviewed for conformance to the general plan, and it does conform to the greatest extent possible while balancing the legal requirements established by the federal law. Again, the proposed code amendment was part of the Planning Division's work plan, and the request satisfies the Your Voice, Our Future general plan. The Planning and Zoning Commission considered it on July 10th and recommended approval. Thank you.
Emily, this is, obviously we were alerted to this as soon as it came down, and I know that staff has been working on the compliance issue. Primarily, this is just compliance with the federal law.
Correct.
Okay. If there's no further...
Could I ask one question? Co-location, you used the word about 12 times. There are two definitions of co-locations. One has to do with the combination of two words in the English language, which makes your communication more understandable. And I think it's spelled with two L's. I was confused by this in here, but I'm easily confused. Maybe you could tell me what co-locations means in this instance.
Sure. Mayor Hiremath, Vice Mayor Waters. So what that means is when a cell facility goes on an existing facility, so with another cell tower or even on a TEP pole, for instance, that is what a co-location
means. Okay. If I'm ever asked about it, I'll tell them. Thank you.
Right. This is a public hearing, so I'll open the public hearing. There are no speakers, so I'll close the public hearing.
Mr. Mayor, I'll make a motion.
Councilmember Snyder.
I move to approve ordinance number 018-10, amending section 25.1 of the Oro Valley Zoning Code, requiring standards for communication facilities as provided in attachment 2.
There a second?
Mr. Mayor, I believe she said ordinance 18-10 instead of 11. If we can just have that clarification for the record, please.
Oh, my apologies, 18-11.
I'll second.
Motion for 18-11. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Mic number 4.
Mr. Mayor, I just want to point out that in the recommended motion, it says 18-10. I don't know if you need to correct that in the document or not.
The actual attachment, the ordinance, is 11, but the wording is 10.
The text that under item B says 10.
Yeah.
So just to clarify, there's a...
is it a typo?
Our record is clear. We have basically a typo. On the subject line 3B,
right.
It says 18-11, and then the recommended motion from which the council member read is 18-10. But in fact... So we're all clear. We're talking about
18-11.
Correct. Okay. Thank you for just
clarifying. No problem. Okay, item number 4.
Discussion and possible action on a proposed communication facility located on the Saguaro Vista Veterinary Clinic property near the southwest corner of Cool Drive and Oracle Road.
Mr. Cohen?
Discussion, there was a debate here on the table about whether there was a vote on 18-11. Was it passed?
She corrected as the first motion maker before the second motion maker did. So the correction was 18-11.
And the question is, was there then a vote?
Yes, that's correct. So there was a second and then a vote, and it was 7-0.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay. See what happens when we don't have council meetings for a while?
Could we ask Malini to explain this one for us? Who's going to do this one?
No, I want somebody else. Anybody, I don't care, anybody else. Malini, go ahead.
What did I miss?
All right, our purpose tonight is to present a new 50-foot cell tower to replace an existing tower in the vicinity. The applicant's request is defined as a Tier 2 communication facility, which means it may be discernible, but most use stealth applications or camouflaging techniques to the greatest extent possible. Approval of this request is contingent on approval of the zoning code amendment you previously heard. The Planning and Zoning Commission considered the applicant's request on July 10th, in which they recommended approval, subject to the conditions in Attachment 1. First, to orient ourselves, the proposed cell tower is located near the southwest corner of Cool Drive and Oracle Road. It is highlighted with a star and on the property of the Saguaro Veterinary Clinic. It is surrounded by other commercial uses as well as apartments to the north. The proposed cell tower is replacing a legal non-conforming facility located nearby, which is indicated by a purple triangle. As stated by the applicant, removal of the cell tower will cause a gap in service if it is not replaced. As such, should this request be approved this evening, the applicant will pursue construction of a temporary site on the vet clinic property until all the necessary permits are required to construct the permanent site. In addition to these two facilities, a smaller cell facility also exists in the area, which is shown with an orange circle. New cell towers are permitted within commercial zoning, and the code requires all cell towers that are 50 feet tall be immediately utilized by multiple providers. The applicant's request complies with this code requirement by allowing both Verizon and Sprint to locate on the tower. As stated during the previous agenda item, setbacks for new towers must comply with the new zoning district building setbacks and be set back away from any property where the use or purpose is a dwelling. The proposed cell tower meets all of these required setbacks except for the setback from the side, which is shown as 23 feet and must be 25 feet. Therefore, there is a condition of approval in Attachment 1 that the location of the cell tower be revised to meet all the required setbacks. In addition to the development standards, the proposed cell tower was also reviewed for its ability to be camouflaged to the greatest extent. As proposed, the cell tower will be camouflaged as a mono elm. However, as you can see in the image on the screen, the elm is shaped differently and much darker than other existing native vegetation in the area. Staff is working with the applicant to revise the color and design of the mono elm to better integrate with the surrounding native plants. And this effort is also included as a condition in Attachment 1.
Thank goodness.
You put some bugs on it, too.
Let's get those leaves right. Come on.
There was one neighborhood meeting held for this project. The main concerns were impacts on views and opportunities for co-locating other wireless providers. This includes that small cell nearby that was that orange circle on the map that's close to the proposed tower. The applicant's request was considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission on July 10th, in which these concerns were discussed further. As stated previously, the applicant is continuing to work with staff to find a design that better integrates with the surrounding native vegetation as much as feasibly possible. Additionally, the applicant has stated there is room for one more provider on the proposed pole should other cell facilities in the area want to co-locate. The proposed cell tower was reviewed for its conformance to the Your Voice, Our Future general plan. As a replacement tower, it fulfills a need in the area and is utilizing camouflaging techniques to reduce visibility from surrounding properties. In summary, the proposed cell tower is in conformance with the Your Voice, Our Future general plan and revised zoning code. As such, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval subject to the conditions in Attachment 1. Thank you.
Councilmember Robin?
Yeah, I've been trying to figure out how to get the words stealth design into this motion because somehow I'm not sure we've ever approved something with the word stealth in it. However, I'd like to make a motion. We can certainly discuss it afterwards. I move to approve the proposed cell tower subject to conditions in Attachment 1, finding it meets the applicable zoning provisions and the general plan.
Second. Motion is second. Further discussion, Councilmember Snyder?
I'm so relieved to hear that you're going to be working with them on a better stealth approach. So
they're going with a pine tree, Mary.
That won't stick out like a sore thumb. What's that timeline look like? Is that going to impede any of the timeline for making this temporary transition?
Mayor Hiram, Councilmember Snyder, so that is an administrative process so that we can do it efficiently.
Great.
Any further discussion?
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Mike, item 5A.
5A, resolution number R18-30, declaring the proposed zoning code amendment to Chapter 23 related to attached dwellings in the R6 zoning district and other related revisions provided in Exhibit A within the attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
This is an AB, so I'll entertain a motion for 5A.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Mike, 5B.
Public hearing, ordinance number O18-12, amending Chapter 23 of the Oro Valley Zoning Code to allow attached dwellings in the R6 multifamily district and other related revisions.
Melanie, go ahead.
She sat down. Yeah. What?
Now what? Now what?
All right, who's got the ball on this one?
Do we have anybody else?
Mr. Vella, how are you? Mr. Vella.
Thank you. I do want to very briefly, quickly thank Ms. Sims for all of her work on all these cases. It was a big lift, and she performed it beautifully. So tonight's this case, in terms of amending the R6 zoning code, in our minds, really falls under the category of housekeeping. An applicant, TJ Bednar, actually applied for this code amendment, and it rectifies something that I think is a really important add to our zoning code. So we're not used to seeing R6 or presenting R6 zoning code amendments or even items before council, because it's a district that we don't see that much in Oro Valley. The district itself accommodates multifamily residential. And the purpose of the district specified in the code is to accommodate high density residential with solid design standards. So currently within R6, apartments are a permitted use. So outright, it is intended for high density. So an interesting fact is that single-family residential is also permitted in R6. But the middle piece, which would be townhomes or attached units, aren't permitted. So the amendment before you tonight is to allow that as a permitted use. It's not to change the densities, the building heights. It's to add a use. So what do I mean by attached dwellings? It's the examples up on the screen. So it's townhomes, condominiums, and patio homes. So just to give you a quick sense of where we have R6 zoning in town, they're primarily along Oracle Road. You might be able to spot El Conquistador Way. If I can get my laser pointer to do its thing. I can't. But about center of the slide, you can see, might be able to make out the entrance to the resort along El Conquistador Way and Oracle Road. So there are R6 zoning, very limited in the town. It tends to be next to commercial areas or very busy streets. And the value of R6 is to have a transition zone between very high activity areas and lower density residential. To give you a quick illustration of how that might work, this illustration shows that you want to have step down in terms of density transitions to create compatibility. On the far right of this graphic, maybe you have apartments, maybe you have a commercial center. The far left is larger lot single family residential. By allowing townhomes in R6, it gives us, the town, the option to have something in the middle as a transition. We're also tonight considering making sure we have adequate development standards for townhomes in R6. By and large, we are maintaining the same density that's allowed in R6, but applying some of the other R4 standards, which is our existing townhome district. In sum, the general plan supports this idea of providing transitions to ensure compatibility, and this is certainly an add to our toolkit to ensure that. This amendment is limited to R6 zoning districts only. Finally, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of this change. Open to any questions. Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Cohen, I'm going to, Councilmember Sam is going to recuse himself, so I'll ask him to leave the chambers and then we'll call him after the vote is taken, please. Thanks, Councilmember Sam.
Mr. Mayor, may I ask you a question about height?
Councilmember Hornet?
What are the height restrictions there?
So the height restrictions, I'll have to look up the exact number. But the way this district works, it's interesting. If you are positioning one of these buildings next to a large lot in R1 zoning, then it's limited to one story. But if you're next door to another multifamily district or commercial, you can go to two-story.
So you could have a two-story townhouse here.
You could have a two-story townhouse, correct.
Two condominiums, one up and one down.
Correct, correct. No more than two-story.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Vice Mayor Waters.
Has something happened or changed in our community to have this come forward now? Is there some particular reason for it now?
I think so. Very much so. So as we're pushing toward build-out and less available land, and you know, folks are looking for some of the sites that have been passed over in the past. And I think also that you know we're seeing a lot of folks downsize and looking for easier options, or either downsizing or folks moving to the community and wanting less property to take care of. So we're seeing folks like TJ Bednar, who normally only does single-family residential, get interested in this type of product. So, and that's why they applied.
Thank you.
Councilman Snyder.
Yeah, thank you. I can attest to, I've had constituents ask me about townhomes. As they're looking to plan the next phase, they're healthy, active, they don't want to take care of the yard anymore. There's definitely interest out there in our resident base. So I think allowing this, cleaning up the code is a great idea. So thank you.
And I think, Mr. Vella, you know, we had talked about this as a council when we reviewed the strategic plan well before, as we were going through the Your Voice, Our Future from a council standpoint before it got vetted to the general public with all those post-it notes and stickies. And I remember vividly one of the conversations that we had is that we need to expand our portfolio. Because currently we only had, at that particular time, multifamily housing in the form of apartments and then single-family residence. And there was really no in-between. And I know that it was kind of tasked for us to take a look at, you know, how do we expand our portfolio? And then after you're looking into it, it was quite revealing that we didn't have a place anywhere in our code that would actually allow for townhomes and condos. And like you said, it's more of a housekeeping item to make sure that we're able to offer residents another addition to the portfolio versus just the standard operating procedure of just apartments or single family homes. So thanks for catching that and thanks for following up on that. With that, it is a public hearing, so I'll open the public hearing. We have one speaker, Paul Loomis.
Good evening, Council. I'm Paul Loomis. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. And I've got a concern here with respect to the zoning associated with this. Is if you look at the zoning code for R4 is very specific with respect to it establishes the requirements for townhomes. And the zoning code R6 is very specific with respect to applying the identifying the requirements for apartments. And then if you were to put a single family home on either of those, it establishes the requirements for those. What this change does is it now allows you in R6 districts to have a dwelling that a single family dwelling that is 3,500 square feet, vice the requirement in the townhome district, which is 5,450 square feet. So that what you're actually doing is you're increasing the allowed density in that particular use and creating a townhome that now can be more dense than in the allowed townhome district. So that what you end up doing is you change the allowed residents per acre to from 8 residents per acre to 12 and a half residents per acre if you simply divide the number of square feet per acre by the allowed minimum gross land area. So that basically what you're doing is you're increasing the allowed maximum density in these particular site areas. And if you look at this particular application, the property does fit the request from the property owner does fit into the requirements of an R4 district. So that for this particular case, if it wasn't simply changing it across the board and across the town, this particular application should be a rezoning request rather than a request to change the entire zoning code. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are no other speakers, so I'll close the public hearing.
Let's hear what buyer has to say.
Well, actually, I thought it was just a simple add to just kind of do some housekeeping. Is the intent to change the density? I didn't even fathom that idea about changing the density, because don't they still have to conform? If the lot is 3,500 square feet, how are you going to get to 54?
Mr. Mayor, there is no change to density here whatsoever within R6 zoning. Non-zero, period. So today, you can put in a single family home within R6 at 3,500 square feet. Okay? Same with apartments. You can have a gross density of one unit per 3,500 square feet. What we're adding is to the column our townhomes at 3,500 square feet. So there's no change whatsoever in terms of the density that's being permitted within any R6 zones tonight. Zero.
Okay.
Let's go,
Councilman Rodman, Hornet, and then Vice Mayor.
Byer, the second part was that it's a higher density than townhomes in R4. If I understood, Paul. Right, so can you address that, please?
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor, Member Rodman. So, Mr. Loomis is correct. Within R4 zoning, which allows townhomes, the minimum the gross density permitted is 5,450 square feet, okay? That's the standard for that district.
So it's
two separate zoning districts we're talking about. So, and we're focused tonight only on R6.
Councilman Hornet, you okay?
Yeah, I was hoping you were gonna say that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
So with that, if there's no further discussion, I'll entertain a motion.
I move to approve ordinance number 018-12, amending chapter 23 of the Oro Valley Zoning Code regarding attached dwellings in the R6 zoning district and other related updates as shown in attachment 2, Exhibit A.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0, and I'll call Councilmember Sama back in. Was your ear at the door? With that, we'll move to future agenda items. Council, any future agenda items? There are no call of the audience speakers, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Motion in a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Have a good evening. Thank you.